What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Talking a Bunch of Hoopla. This week, I have a special guest, the host of Sports Stories with Denny Lennon, the host himself, Denny Lennon.
That's me. Hi, John.
How's it going?
Good, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. So to anyone listening who may not be familiar with this podcast, let me tell you what it's about. Sports Stories with Denny Lennon is a podcast that brings to light uplifting stories from a wide range of sports figures, whether speaking to Norm Bass, who is the first African-American athlete since World War II to play two professional sports, or speaking with Jimmy Lennon Jr., a Hall of Fame ring announcer for the sport of boxing, who also just happens to be his cousin. But besides that, talking to sports figures, he also dives deep into things like retelling of the Venice Backyard Championships, or the VBC, which is a legendary volleyball tournament played in the backyards of Venice, California, from the years 1983 to 1996, every Wednesday on a show. To also speaking with authors, documentarians, as well as hosting a YouTube live show called the Happy Hour Show, where it's like a Tonight Show type segment and an overall good and fun time. So if you want to check out a show, just look up Sports Stories with Denny Lennon on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere podcasts are available. So yeah, so I wanted to talk about the Mike Tyson fight because I was very young when he was fighting. I was born in 94, so I missed pretty much most of his career. Mm-hmm. So seeing the idea of a 51-year-old fighting again is I just don't get it personally.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts, right? Well, you're saying it's kind of nuts, you know, because Mike Tyson's kind of nuts. Now, that said, it appears to me, and it's interesting because I asked some of the same questions to my cousin Jimmy Lennon Jr., who in working with Don King and then subsequent promoters has been in the ring and doing the the pre-fight and everything with Mike Tyson. It seems that he's much more stable these days than he was, you know, back in the days when all kind of things were happening. So that's one thing. And I think maybe a lot of that has to do with, you know, his vice, if you call it that right now, is cannabis or smoking pot or whatever. And he seems to have balanced out. And given that, can he fight still at 51? Well, we probably know he could still throw that blow that'll take care of business. But let's not forget, at least I won't forget because I'm of an age, when George Foreman surprised all of us and came back and took the world heavyweight championship at an advanced age. I want to say he was late 40s by the time he did that. And that was crazy. And nobody saw that one coming. And then I got one other one for you. I don't know if he's coming back or not, but I'm going to have a sit down with him relatively soon. And we hung out actually in my backyard recently. That's Shannon Briggs. All right, so Shannon Briggs held the world title. I think it was like mid-90s, early 90s in that time. And he has a similar path to Mike Tyson's, where there was a lot of substance abuse and other psychological problems that had beat him down. But then he kind of came back and stabilized himself, and only vice being smoking pot. And he is in unbelievable shape. And he's actually training other fighters, including who's the social media guy, Logan Paul.
Yeah.
And a few of those, right? And so Shannon's considering a comeback. So, you know, shoot, Tom Brady is still challenging for a Super Bowl at this crazy advanced age. And, you know, we saw what other athletes can do in their sport. And really in boxing, and especially in the heavyweight division, if you can hold back, if you can hold your own for a while and get off those two shots, who knows? And Iron Mike, you know, he's not a big guy. So that means there's more compact muscle to him that may be able to sustain this. It'll be, I know we're all going to watch.
Oh yeah. I'm definitely going to buy this pay-per-view when it comes out. I remember reading an article, I think a year or two ago, about Mike Tyson, that even when he was doing the movie, The Hangover, he was like super heavy on drugs during that. Mm-hmm. And then since then he's gotten clean. Like you said, the only thing he's really doing right now is just smoking weed. And I know he's still doing stuff with like pigeons. I know he's like super into that, I think.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, because I don't know if you follow MMA at all, but
a little bit.
When Chuck Liddell came out of retirement to fight Tito Ortiz for Oscar De La Hoya's short stint in MMA, I was like excited because, you know, I grew up watching Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz when they were in their prime. And you know, they were, of course, older guys. I believe Chuck, when he fought, was 49, and Tito was, like, I think 43 or 44. Mm-hmm. And then that fight didn't go well, of course, because Chuck Liddell, by that point, he was pretty much done. But I've also noticed, too, with a lot of fighters that they never really lose that kind of itch to fight. It's always, like, they obviously will step away due to, like, health reasons, or it's just they got older and, you know, their body couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
But now that, of course, it's a different age and you know, with CBD and marijuana being kind of this thing that's coming around for a lot of people use to even make themselves, you know, recover faster and just feel better overall physically, that I'm curious to see how it's going to go for him in September. And plus, I mean, Roy Jones Jr., even from my understanding, he's always been in great shape. So it's going to be, I'm really interested to see how that goes.
As am I. I follow MMA now, you know, but I'm of an age where I came up when boxing was still, you know, held everybody's attention. I was actually young enough where you would know virtually who was holding the belt in different age divisions as you came up. And then, as you know, it started to splinter and different promoters started, you know, to, you know, just start to move the sport in different directions. It lost its fancy, and MMA, to its credit, really did the job of taking over. And there's guys like, you know, that are your age, and you know, a guy my daughter is now dating. He's huge MMA, would never miss any fight ever. And I get it. I was like that with boxing. Yeah, it's pretty interesting too to think about the idea that of what like CBD can do, right? I mean, think of all these NFL players who have to like hide and mask the fact that they're trying to make recovery on a pretty tame drug, as opposed to, you know, some of the other drugs they could be taking in order to come back that would be legal. It's, you know, it's kind of another one of those things that the NFL moves slowly on.
Yeah, hopefully they kind of, I mean, they've seemed to kind of ease up a little bit, because even like Josh Gordon, he's been caught multiple times with marijuana. And there's been a ton of like retired players who come out saying that I would smoke before games because it would just physically help me get through this game. Like I wouldn't be able to play without it. I mean, hopefully it does. But I mean, I know a lot of people are still very, very old school with their mentality when it comes to marijuana, which I understand, because for a lot of people, it depends. It could be a religious thing, or that's just how they were raised, which, again, is understandable and fair.
A lot, you know, of us raised on Joe Friday and Dragnet, just doing that speech, man, letting you know about the gateway drug. Hey, you mentioned Tyson still working with the Pigeons and so forth. And don't you find that interesting how like that's part of the lore of being a fighter? Or, you know, like a boxing champ, because I mean, that goes all the way back to like that classic film On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando. He had pigeons. And then it seems like all these boxers always had pigeons. Even like Rocky, I think, got involved with pigeons for a while. It's kind of a trip, like that Mike Tyson is, you know, he studies history and stuff like that, that he got into it. And I guess, I don't know how you judge somebody if they're good at raising pigeons or whatever, but he seems to really have become an expert at it.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine it's kind of like a calming thing, I guess. Cause also like it's not like you're going from something so violent to just something simple, just in birds and just how they live. And especially cause pigeons, at least I'm from Connecticut, so we're not too far from like New York, and like pigeons are just looked at in like disgust. And it's like, of course, it's like pigeons and rats, or like, you know, you're like, oh geez, here they go. Just throw some bread or whatever and just get us out of our way, cause they're everywhere. But it's like, he's like turning the stigma around for like pigeons, which is pretty great.
Nice. Pigeons getting a rebranding. UConn, how were you a UConn fan growing up at all? Basketball?
A little bit. I mean, definitely when they were, you know, in the tournament, or anytime they kind of make any noise, like the whole state kind of just like, you know, watches it. And right. But I wasn't too big into it. I mean, I went to a couple games up in Hartford I've seen mainly like women's basketball games, but also, I mean, both men's and women's have been super dominant anyway. So,
dude. Yeah, I mean, I think like 2004 and then again in 2014, both of them won the NCAAs, which is just nuts to think of like having that kind of that program. And then, you know, you got Jesus Shuttleworth came out of there.
And the amount of people that came through is nuts.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, even one time, because I work at a Whole Foods in my state, and I think Kevin Olsen, the former UConn men's basketball coach, came in, and like the whole store like stopped. It was like he was like a huge celebrity, but also like his driver kind of parked kind of like in three spots. I'm like, all right, that was kind of weird, but everyone stopped to take photos. It was like a pop star walked in or something. I was like, oh cool, it's him, you know, it's great, and it was great to see him.
That is kind of a trip, though. I love that part of collegiate athletics, the regionality of it, and how, you know, if Kevin, you know, were to stop somewhere in California, it would mean nothing. But out in UConn, it means everything. And, you know, it's the same. I've been to a few different places for college football games, and it's so cool to see the way a community rallies around that university, especially during football season. I've always enjoyed that. And that's like something that, you know, that we're all going to miss, because I don't know that any of us are going to be able to get to any games in person this football season.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Because I know like a lot of FCS like colleges and conferences have been just like, we're not even going to have fall sports this year with COVID.
Yeah.
So I imagine that's tough. And also, yeah, I don't think, I mean, I know NFL teams are, they're allowing like a small percentage of fans to come to their stadiums, but it's nowhere near to what they're able to hold. I think it said like a 75,000 person stadium, they're going to do like 14,000 people, if not less.
Yeah. And I kind of have a problem. I don't even know what the point of that kind of is. Because, okay, you're not going to create the atmosphere that we're all used to, whether we're watching on TV or we're there. And it would seem like those 14,000 people, too, at some point, if you're a stadium operator, you're not going to open the whole stadium. So at some point, those people are going to interact in concession lines or in restroom lines or where they park or where they enter. Because you can't, like, staff like you would for 75,000 people. That's just not going to work. So it seems like good intention, tough execution that actually going to play out. And at the last second, the county commissioner could shut you down. So I'm still not seeing the wisdom in that one.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work at all because it just seems like, especially if people have their own feelings about wearing a mask and like social distancing, mm-hmm. then it's going to just cause a problem, especially if, you know, during halftime, everyone leaves to go get concessions and it's just going to be, there's no way you're going to be able to, you know, help like 1,000 people if that's how many go up or however to deal with this. I just hope in general that it just happens regardless of anything else. I mean, at this point, I'm okay with not seeing fans because it's worked for the UFC really well that,
they've been all over it, no fans. They have been all over it. I've been really impressed with the job. I've always been impressed by UFC and MMA and how they operate on that cutting line. It kind of reminds me in some levels on how the NHL always knew that they were like the number four kind of pro league. And they did the best job of fan integration and just being in control of their stuff. And you see that with some of these other sports, too, that are much more like digital and in tune with their fans. And I've been really impressed with them. Hey, John, did you happen to check out any baseball last night on opening night?
I wasn't because I had to work. So I call highlights, though.
Yeah, it was fun to see my Dodgers back out there and getting after it. I was stoked on that, so much so that I, drove and got a pizza that's similar to the Tommy Lasorda pizza that's available at the stadium. Got the same ballpark beer from a local brewery that's available in the stadium. And my wife and I were enjoying our Dodgers back on the air. And even if it was canned in applause and cutout board people, they're up there in the stands. It was still our Dodgers back on. And it was so good to see sports, just back on the air like that, the mainstream sports.
Yeah, that's the thing that's been tough, too, because like I'm sure with yourself, like we both run sports shows. So it's like it's hard to do that when, nothing's happening. It's interesting to see to make it work. But I think the thing I'm most kind of intrigued about is how the NFL is going to handle all this, because they really haven't had a plan for like keeping their players safe or anything, because the NBA hasn't had much time. They figured out with their bubble in Orlando, baseball's figured it out. I'm sure hockey's like figuring out because they're starting up soon. But the NFL has had the most time to figure this out. And then they're still within 4 days of training camp, supposed to be in 4 days. They're just like, we're still trying to figure it out
Yeah, it says something too to the nature of billionaire owners that have a commissioner that works directly for them. And so they just handle their billionaire things. So they forget to employee safety. They forget that, maybe we should trademark the names that we're going to inevitably be forced to choose.
That was so funny.
Right? So some other dude just swoops in and trademarks everything and takes it. Hilarious. That's exactly what you get, Snyder, for being a jackass. And then not being – and so it just seems like they deal at this billionaire level where they just know we're all going to watch and come and buy. And so then this whole idea that they wouldn't even take care of those assets, which are our players – also speaks to the years and years of how the NFL has treated their players, which is they're disposable. At some point outside of your quarterback, we're going to get rid of you and move on to the next person. And we're not really interested in career longevity as much as we need those two or three really good years.
Yeah, it's kind of like disrespectful. I mean, especially how so many players get treated like rude. And even the whole thing with DeAndre Hopkins arguing with Bill O'Brien, the Houston Texans head coach, where he's like, yeah, we didn't get along. And the idea that you trade away your best player essentially for someone who hasn't been performing well in the last few years, and you're kind of just, okay, we're going to just figure it out. It's like, I don't get it. I don't know what's,
Like you mentioned, it's kind of different, the way we're covering sports and so forth. But so one of the things I did right before we had a shutdown in California, and then I'm going to have him on my live show tonight, is his name's Dr. Bert Mandelbaum. He's the chief medical officer for the Olympics and for the World Cup. So like, he's a heavy, heavy hitter, right? And it's going to be really interesting to ask him, give me the idea. Like, what was the NFL thinking, and what is unique to the NFL that they have to deal with that is going to keep them from having the one that has the outbreak that's going to, you know, spread amongst all of the players, considering, you know, the nature of the game.
Yeah, I'm going to be looking forward to that. The one thing I did want to bring up with you, since we're talking about, you know, obviously COVID in sports, you've talked about it recently on your show, is the cancellation of the Stanford men's volleyball team.
Yeah.
I know you guys have been pushing big for that. I don't know if you want to speak to the people about what's going on with that exactly.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, unique to Southern California and the state of California is our love of volleyball. I would say, you know, I know you probably have a strong fan base up in Connecticut, and like something like field hockey and lacrosse that has taken hold of your community up there. Like, volleyball is that important on the West Coast. Now, it's certainly played, you know, across the country. Penn State always puts up a good fight and so forth and so on, but it's particularly strong. And there's this whole junior system that's built up that moves not only women or girls towards, you know, collegiate volleyball, but men and boys. They come up through the program and they go up. So that's why it's really got a lot of people's attention. The fact that Stanford University, in an effort to pare down their athletic program, eliminated 11 sports. So quite frankly, 9 of them, not a big argument. I mean, I'm for participation in multiple sports and so forth, but it's not always the university's that's incumbent to do it. So that said, two, you know, major D1 sports, which are men's volleyball and wrestling, were part of these 11 that were cut. And there's been this tremendous resistance to the Board of Trustees and to the athletic department by this volleyball community that's tied into Stanford, a 2-time NCAA championship team. And some 35,000 signatures to date have been put on a petition to reinstate, so much so that there's a lot of heavy hitters that have played in volleyball, no pun intended, in Stanford volleyball, that are willing to raise the money that has been earmarked, nor that it's been like identified as what it costs or what the cost deficit is. So, and now the university's having to listen to this movement, when in fact, what they first said is there's no amount of money you can give us. Any money you give us is just going to go towards creating a club, you know, environment or club for the sport. But now there's been such a strong movement by really a savvy group of men that have graduated from that program, and then that have started to move this idea forward. So we were fortunate enough to, you know, the person who kind of broke the story quickly, her name's Sabelle Zhang, and she's the Stanford Daily sports editor. And so she wrote on this, and that's where that article started to make circulation. And then some people that, in particular people that are on the show last night, like Matt Furbringer, who was a 4-time All-American. He also was an assistant coach on the men's national Olympic team. And Kavika Shoji, who 3-time All-American, who was a bronze medalist with our men's Olympic team. They are part of this group that has moved everything forward. So we had those two. We had Steven Irvin on. And then we had a premier high school volleyball coach who runs both the club and Loyola High School's dominant program out here, who spoke to it, what it means at that level. So we felt like it was a pretty good show, really good show last night, and it's going to help get the word out. One of the nice things that we do is our ability to share our platform. It's not like it just lives, you know, somewhere on ABC or ESPN and stays there. We're able to really share it, and hopefully that gets out and gets some traction out there, and they can get the attention of their administration and move their sport back into the conference, because give them one more year and then it's supposed to drop off from there. But hopefully they find a way to extend it beyond the 21 season, if in fact they get to play in 21.
Yeah, hopefully if all this gets, you know, COVID stuff gets kind of cleared out soon, then they can get back to normal. But if anybody does want more information on, you know, what's going on with the Stanford men's volleyball team, you can go to MVB.com, and the more information's on there as well. And I'm sure I did sign the petition to bring that back, as well as the one for the wrestling team as well.
Yeah, nice, John. I appreciate that support, and I know they do as well. That's That's awesome. There's actually, you know, John, I got a what's going to be a 5-part podcast series coming up, right? That's going to be a video podcast about this school in Northeast Ohio called Madison High School. They're the Blue Streak football team, and their coach retired after like 20 years or whatever. And it was a beautiful story of, you know, football and what it means to a community and people coming back and seeing their coach off. But beyond that, he just hit me up when the show was going on saying that from the school next door to him, a full scholarship was going out to a wrestler from Perry out there in Northeast Ohio. And now he's like, wait, this is my lifelong dream, right? I'm going to Stanford to, you know, because I picked it for its academics, but also the fact that I could wrestle at a D1 level. And now he's got to figure, okay, really? I only get one year of that. And now, you know, that's really got to upset a person's life that now suddenly, you know, from Ohio, they're like, no, I guess I'm not going to live that California dream. Go out there and go to a premier university. I got to switch gears. So we're hoping both those sports can make it way back.
Yeah. I mean, as do I, because I can imagine that, like you said, like this is people's dreams to, you know, play for these colleges and all that. And they work so hard and then just getting a Zoom call, just like, hey, by the way, we're no longer doing this. So best of luck and good luck out there. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. So thanks for supporting that. I know a lot of people appreciate we're getting some support across the country.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. And after this podcast goes up, well, after we're done recording, at least I'll go on my social medias and I'll promote all like the change, you know, petitions and all that. So
nice.
So more aware. Cause I mean, I'm not myself athletically gifted. I did not get that from my family. We're not very athletically savvy when it comes to sports, but at the end of the day, you know, I can't imagine having, you know, something you've worked so hard for just get taken away with you within minutes. And you're just kind of like, now I don't know what to do now. And I imagine it's kind of scary for a lot of these kids, you know, in these sports who work so hard and so long. And to now that I'm sure even like across the country where even like high school, you know, and other colleges, of course, where like sports are just not happening now and they're losing full years where they can, you know, advance in their careers and hopefully, you know, make a profession out of it, that they no longer have that option. And
no doubt about it. John, you may not have been given the gifts athletically and so forth, but I did listen to a few of your podcasts and I really appreciate your take on a lot of things, in particular, you know, on the Washington Redskins and the debacle that is that franchise right now. And also your focus on the gymnastics and the Nassar case. That was really good take by you.
Thank you.
So, I enjoyed that. And, you know, you're on your game here.
No, thank you. Yeah, at least with those, you know, I'm trying my best to bring to light kind of more, I don't want to say negative things, but things about this, like about sports that do happen and that don't get as much attention as they should. Because yes, sports, you know, they are positive and they do bring people together, but you know, a lot of things do happen. And I also brought up the gymnastics story as well, because I myself can relate to that a bit. I won't get into details, but I had played football my sophomore year of high school, and I was also myself sexually assaulted by players on the team. So I related a lot to it. And also, I try to talk about it throughout the podcast as well, because, you know, that's caused me to deal with depression and all that. And I've dealt with that for a while. And, you know, it's things that it's always hard for people to talk about, which is completely understandable. And, you know, I give a lot of those women and, you know, girls who stepped up a lot of credit, because it took me a few years to talk about my, you know, my issues and all that. But it's one of those things where if the more people talk about it, the easier the conversation becomes. And then it's easier to now find solutions and things to do, you know, to make sure that this doesn't happen to any more kids and throughout and, you know, in the future. And then also people who are going through it now. So,
John, appreciate that. I'd like to think we do our best to stay on the forefront of issues of that nature too. And it is, it's really important. It's, you know, as an athletic director and a longtime administrator of sports, I always tell those that are my coaches or that are working that our number one job right out of the gate is the security and keeping our kids safe. And then it's to build good people. And so, you know, it's difficult that happened. But it sounds like on the backside, your ability to articulate it and then to, you know, put it into action and try to save the next group of kids is really admirable. And a part of the healing process, I'm sure. So I commend you on that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a tough road, but you know, it's you know, I'm trying my best to make sure that, you know, at least give people like someone that they can relate to, because like a lot of people, like I myself have dealt with my own family issues too. So it's like if you don't have someone that you can feel you could talk to, that at least, you know, whether we can talk through like just through a computer or, you know, in person, however, at least people have someone that they can like at least relate to in some kind of way that, you know, I'm not going through it alone. Like there's other people who like do get it. So that's what I try my best to do. So I think I'm doing all right so far, but
yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it, you know, I mean, it sounds like it through the computer, but you know, it's not easy to deal with. You know, we in particular on our show have partnered with a couple of groups that we feel are doing really important work. One's the Heroes Movement, which is rehabilitating veterans, you know, through exercise. And that's a collection of trainers across the country that are dealing with, you know, veterans that may have trauma, mental or physical, and through design workout programs. And the other is a group called My Stuff Bags. And that's my sister's foundation. And that reaches out to children in crisis that, you know, are dealing like in either in the foster system or the juvenile system. And they're able to reach out to them when they're in those stressful situations, being pulled away from their family and so forth, and get them a bag that has, you know, the kind of stuff that they need just to get by. And then to provide some kind of mentoring on the backside. So we're in it too, as far as trying to do our best to get the word out, to do the right thing. Right. Because most of us, I think in this country, we, you know, irrespective of what we hear and see often, are trying to do the right thing and are good people and are trying to help one another.
Yeah. I mean, as long as we're trying, that's the best we can do. I mean, as long as we try our best and just have like a good positive and just, you know, really meaning. I know a lot of people nowadays, especially when it comes to mental health, kind of use it to their advantage to like prosper and all that. And which is kind of, that's a whole other conversation, but
yeah,
you know, as long as we're out there and just kind of just trying to do our best to make sure that like people have the information and people know that, that there is help. There are plenty of like resources nowadays where they can reach out to get kind of any kind of help they need for whatever it may be, you know, just know that, you know, they deserve better. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's why I like your show a lot too, because, you know, from a lot of like other shows and things like that, they kind of just focus on one thing where it's like, oh, I just talk about football or baseball, which is great. And I'm not downing that or anything. But like you, when you say sports stories, you actually do talk about like stories. So it's not just like, well, I played football and then this happened. This is great. And I'm retired. Well, that was fun. It's like you actually talk to the people, like you get to know the person itself. Because I know a lot of people do forget that the people that we see on TV or, you know, we see like live in sports, they're real people. So, yeah. You know, they all have whatever positive, negative going on that like they all went through this. And yeah, like you may talk to like you have on the show, like a Trevor Lawrence or like a Norm Bass or whoever it may be. It's like, but these still people have these crazy, interesting lives that they still have gone through to get to the point to where we know we now know who they are. So
yeah.
I give you guys a lot of credit for that.
I appreciate that. And that's what's, you know, I think ultimately what can make for a good show is you do what interests you. And that's always interests me, people's backstory, you know, how they got to where they are, and irrespective of whether they were, you know, a multi champion or maybe they just made the league, or maybe, you know, their position is something different, but everybody's story can be really interesting when it's looked at. And that's what we try to do. And I'm glad you brought up Norm Bass, because to me, that's like my favorite story so far. John Alsey was my buddy over at the YMCA. Now, granted, you know, he's got a couple of years on me. I'm 56, he's 80, but we would just be at the YMCA in the pool and I would just warm up next to him before I swim. And we would just talk in the training pool, right? Cause he was, you know, he's just, and so we would just talk, we struck up a conversation. Then one day I saw like a circular on the wall at the YMCA. It said, you know, first Black American to play pro football and pro baseball. And I was like, what the heck? And I went down, I said, Norm, you play? He says, yeah, you got to look me up, young blood. You got to look me up. And so I looked him up and one, put it this way, he's hilarious. He's the like one of the funniest guys I've ever met. Just the way he needles people and the way he brags about himself, hilarious. Like he's really funny, but he's got this genuinely terrific heart. And he's always got a little snicker where, you know, he smiles and you know he's giving people a hard time. And it cracks me up. And so then I said, Norm, we got to do this. He goes, I don't know. What are you talking about? Radio? And I said, look, it's different. You'll see. And so it took a while, but we finally got him, John, to sit down. And I really am proud of that series because he's got this unbelievable life. Like his father had to leave the South as part of that Black migration because as both a boxer and a man who stood up for himself, he created too many enemies. So he had to leave. And what drove him to Northern California was the fact that the maritime industry was kind of taken off up there and he could get a fair waged job. And so he moved his family up there. And then that was where Norm Bass and his brother, Dick Bass. Now, Dick Bass his brother's 3 years senior to him, was an all-pro running back for the Los Angeles Rams. And some people that are old-time people will recognize that name, Dick Bash. But Dick and Norm, like, they represented Vallejo High School up there. It's so much so that Norm came down as a football player and played in the Shrine Game. He scored a touchdown. He threw a 73-yarder. He picked off a ball, and he kicked 3 extra points. And he punted for the team. And the white kid got the MVP award that carried 17 yards. So he, like, learned to deal with this his whole life. And he went from that to having to go to, like, Kansas City as a baseball player. And he was under Charlie Finley, like, the crazed, you know, the unbelievably maverick owner. And Charlie Finley took a liking to him. So he kept him alive in the Kansas City. But what we didn't know was that he had severe rheumatoid arthritis. And it was manifesting itself, but he really couldn't get access to the medical services like other people could, right? So Norm eventually got run out of baseball because he couldn't grip the ball anymore. And he tries out for the Denver Broncos. There's like over 100 guys try out. He makes the roster first week. He like makes the roster, the Denver Broncos, because he's just like this hard-hitting defensive back with this great skill, right? But after about 2 games or something, hitting just started, and his body's just ravaged with this. Finally, he gets diagnosed rheumatoid arthritis at 25 years old. He's done. He's the first guy to play pro baseball and pro football in the post WW2 era as a black American. And he's done. Now he became bitter, and he really started, you know, he took it out on his family and those around him. He took a job in the aerospace industry for years, but eventually he found himself again, because he went to this park in Inglewood called Rogers Park. Inglewood is where the Forum used to be, and the Lakers would win their championships and stuff. And that's where he lived, not far from where I'm talking to you from right now. And he went there, and he found these kids that were playing, or rather these older men that were playing table tennis. And they were beating the heck out of these kids just to get rid of them. And Norm said, well, why don't you play me? And Norm got killed. But the next day he got better and better. He got so good to the point that he started dominating all these people at this park, and he would talk about it like Muhammad Ali or whatever, you know, right? He'd pump himself up as he came in, and these people all started to take a liking to him because he's straight hilarious. And then he got designated as a Paralympian. So he joined the USA's national team, got international experience, and eventually wins the bronze medal in the Olympic Games in Sydney. I mean, as a 67-year-old, I think at the time, he wins the bronze medal. And he comes back and he meets President Clinton in the White House, and he goes up and President Clinton says, I know who you are. You're that guy, Norm Bash, or whatever. And he goes, hey, you want to show me the Oval Office? I want to see where it went down, like that. And the Secret Service had to had to come in and be like, and then Clinton's all, I like you. Okay, we got to talk later. Dude, he's nuts. He's so funny. Like, he tells stories about Aretha Franklin, because where he lived when he was a younger man, and Dick Bass, it was this part of Los Angeles that a judge had put an order out, said, quit traveling around the city. You guys are too wild, kind of, right? But, you know, it was a racist kind of a decree. Nonetheless, that became the party central for black musicians, actors, comedians, and athletes whenever they would come to Los Angeles in the 60s. So this group that hosted all these parties called themselves the Black Pack, like the Rat Pack, but the Black Pack. And they would have these massive parties and stuff. And that's where, like, Norm eventually meets Aretha Franklin, and he dates her. He's like, they got Red Fox and Muhammad Ali and all of these people that are coming through there. It's this unbelievable untold story. And right at the center of it is one of the most interesting people I've ever met that I didn't even know had played these sports. And this whole story just comes out only because, you know, the interest was there at who the human being was. And so I love that series. And sorry, I took forever on your show to explain that, but I get fired up when I talk about Norm Bass.
Hey, no problem at all. No, I listened to most of them. I haven't finished the last couple, but no, his story's great, and it's really interesting to see what kind of like life that man's lived, because it's pretty nuts. Yeah. Like what he's done in his time. I mean, I give him all the credit.
It's a lot of fun, and he's still going. He's got this one restaurant he likes to go to, and because of the quarantine and so forth, he couldn't go for a while. And he's a big character there, of course, and that's where I interviewed him from. But as I said, hey, Norm, I'll meet you there because they reopened. I said, I'll show you some of it on my computer, because there's no way he would figure out that it's on YouTube or whatever. And so I met him at the restaurant, and when they opened the doors, the whole staff came from behind the kitchen. All of the wait staff came in, and they went, Norm, and they all cheered for him. And it was so sweet, you know, because they don't know his story. And they love him so much because he's such a character and so interactive with people that they were all came out to just welcome Norm back. And he sat there and he watched some of the interview and he got teary eyed. And he was like, "This is really good, man. I didn't know you're so good at what you do," or something along these lines. Started giving me crap, and it was beautiful. So, yeah, I love that story, and I hope people that listen to your show will, you know, dive in on it's just, you know, YouTube.com Sports Stories with Denny Lennon, and then just look up Norm Bass and look up that series, and I think people will love that one.
Yeah, I'll definitely make sure to even tell like my friends who, you know, are into sports to check that out, because it's a story that a lot of people should know, because like you said, it's super interesting and it's something that like you'd see on like a Netflix documentary series or something, which is, I mean, he should with the way you, I mean, the story's been going. So
yeah, yeah, right. They're picking up a lot of stuff. So I got to get it out there, man.
Yeah, right. Why not get behind it now?
Right.
But well, I do want to ask though, how are you guys doing though over there? Because I know I only hear what's been going on with the news with like COVID and, you know, California, but like, you know, how are you and the family doing with all, you know, everything going on, of course?
Thank you for asking. Yeah. Fortunately, in our family, everybody's, you know, safe and healthy. In fact, one of the things that affected our family, my boy, our son, he's 28. My God. All right. So he's 28 and he had planned to get married, you know, in September with a wedding at like Lake Tahoe and the like. But there's too many restrictions that were going to be placed on that. So they got married on Zoom and it was really sweet. It was unexpected at how emotional it was, but it was of its time. It's what's, you know, happening right now. And Vaughn and Devin, they love each other so much. They just had to get that done. And so to see that on Zoom happen one day in South Lake Tahoe, and then the next day, our immediate family was able to get together in our backyard and celebrate them, was certainly unexpected, but you know, it was, that piece of humanity and love that we could still find in this time. Right. And so that's like the one point I'll always look back on, hopefully from this time, to go look at that bright spot. And hopefully, you know, we don't have to be here for too much longer. But yeah, the rest of LA County is having a really difficult time. You got to keep in mind, this is a very diverse population. And so your black and brown population has a very difficult time of accessing technology. They can't just take off of work and stay at home. Those things just don't make any sense. And they're in high risk professions. So our rate continues, you know, to climb. Now, I think we're unlike some other states who aren't exactly tied into science. And so they see this in a different light. That's not necessarily the case in California. I think the case is what I just stated. You know, we're such a diverse population with such a large amount of people that have to work every day, that this is just having a tough time going away.
Cause I know I've seen some stuff with like about Connecticut, and I've seen things where it'll say that we're kind of going in the green where things are looking good, but then the next moment it's not. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's like changing every day. I mean, for the most part, it seems like people, at least in my area, have been taking this very seriously, which is the goal, of course. But you do have those few people who have their own opinions because they want to play doctor about, you know, what they should do and what not do. But,
you know, you got to look. I always look to history because, you know, over 100 years ago, our country had to deal with this in 1918 in what was called the Spanish flu, that flu pandemic. And what it did get tied up into was politics at that time, too, because at the time, you know, President Wilson was in the middle of his term, but he lost the House. He lost the House and the Senate because he played politics with the pandemic. And when he did that, the Republicans then took over. And so even though we're looking at a reverse situation, perhaps coming up soon, that happened then. Our country has always been political. And then, but if you look in like if you look at World War II, I mean, look at what London had to do to overcome a massive bombing by Germany. Like everybody had to turn out their lights at night so they didn't provide light for the enemy. People got to wear a mask and keep distance. Like it's not a right. It's like what you have to do. Like we have to win, right? So this idea that people like out here, right in the middle of Orange County is Huntington Beach, and everybody there refuses to wear a mask because they say it's a violation of their rights. And you have to think, like, would you have kept your lights on and let the Nazis just bomb you? Like, what's the story? Just like everybody's got to do this together to get through it so we can all get back to our lives, and including, you know, go to games, go watch a pro football game or go see my Dodgers in person again. In the meantime, man, we all got to just behave.
Exactly. So if you're listening to this, whoever you may be, please wear a mask, sanitize your hands, wash your hands, you know, make sure you're social distancing and doing everything you're supposed to do to keep yourself, everyone around you safe. Because the last thing you want to do is get corona, make your life more difficult than it already is.
No doubt.
You don't need that. So yeah, I think that's all we have time for today, though. I do appreciate you coming on. It's been, I had a great time today. It was great, you know, hearing from you and, you know, everything going on. So
same here, John. I very much appreciate you, buddy. Thank you for having me on. I look forward to having you on my show if you got the time.
Yeah, I think August 7th I'm available. So yeah, I'll be on there for that day.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah, we'll make that plan because I think I get to keep my social distance and my mask on because I got to head to Cocoa Beach in Florida and operate the Junior Olympics of Beach Volleyball for the Amateur Athletic Union and do something of the National Championships of Beach Volleyball are coming up in Chula Vista like a week after that. And that's Chula Vista is like down near San Diego area. So in both instances, we're taking all precautions to keep our athletes safe. And so we'll be doing a remote show and we'll look forward to checking in with you in Connecticut.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds like a blast though, still. Hey.
Yep. We'll do the best we can to keep everybody safe and give those young athletes a chance to play.
Definitely. So yeah, if there's anything you want to plug, you know, go for it. You know, anything you want to promote?
You know, just let everybody know, name's Denny Lennon. It's Denny like the restaurant, Lennon like the Beatle. That's the easiest way to find me. And if you do, I got a Patreon that's /Denny Lennon that's got some behind the scenes stuff that you might enjoy. And in addition, we put out on YouTube all the time. As I mentioned that, you know, youtube.com, Sports Stories with Denny Lennon, and our podcast home site is sportsstoriespodcast.com. So any and all of those places you can find us. And then we do what we can on social media to push a lot of our clips and ideas.
So yeah, definitely check him out. Make sure you follow him on his social medias and check out his podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever podcasts you are available on any device you may use. And thank you all for taking the time to listen to the podcast. And I will see you all next time.